From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hello and welcome to another of our entertainment podcasts from NewsOK.com. I'm George Lang and with me is Brandy McDonald, and we're talking about movies as usual, and this is the week. This is when the latest film from Quentin Tarantino arrives, Inglourious Basterds. Brandy, you got to do the interviews. You saw the movie. Talk about it.
4 stars.
Wow.
Better than Pulp Fiction.
Oh, come on!
Better than Pulp Fiction. It is better than Pulp Fiction.
No!
I actually went back. I thought, this is better than Pulp Fiction. I thought, no. And then I went and watched Pulp Fiction, like, last week, and I went, my goodness, this was better than Pulp Fiction.
Oh, please, lady. So, I mean, come on. That's like in the Pantheon.
Oh, make room in the Pantheon.
Wow.
I called it his most glorious cinematic achievement yet. So, as usual, I mean, you've got him, you know, the Tarantino likes to mash up all different kinds of genres,
right,
and kind of mix them all together in unexpected ways and then take it to the next level. And that's what he does here with a war movie.
Wow.
You know, this thing has been percolating for 10 years, mm-hmm, and boy, did all of that percolating pay off. It basically mixes all sorts of, like, espionage movies and, revenge missions and period epics and, mm-hmm, black comedies. And, I mean, you've got... and the characters are even more memorable. That's what really elevated for me, is the characters are that much more memorable and the acting is that much better,
wow,
than anything he's ever done. So think about Kill Bill or Pulp Fiction. All those characters that you remember like this,
right,
okay, up a level. Up another level.
And I mean, we're talking about a movie that doesn't even have the kind of, like, star power other than Brad Pitt, right?
Right. Internationally, this is an all-star cast.
Yeah.
But for Americans, pretty much there's Brad Pitt, there's Eli Roth, if you, mm-hmm, know enough to actually recognize him,
right,
having, you know,
BJ Novak from The Office. Sam Levine from Freaks and Geeks. I mean, some interesting casting choices here.
From the National Treasure movies. But
right,
I mean, there's
right,
not a lot of really big, besides Brad Pitt, really standout people. But from the opening moments, this pretty much establishes itself as his best work. And he always starts strong. He always starts, mm-hmm, with some... mind-bogglingly great opening scene where you never know where it's going, and, mm-hmm, when it's over, you're not still quite sure where you're going, but you're hooked.
Yeah.
But this basically drops the audience right onto this small French dairy farm during the German occupation, and the farmer there gets a visit from Nazi Colonel Hans Landa, who's played by Christoph Waltz, who got, mm-hmm, hands down easily ran away with the Best Actor award at Cannes this year.
Wow.
And deserves it. Terrifies in 4 languages. but he's known as the Jew Hunter, and he's searching out any remaining Jewish families that might be hanging around in France. And basically, over the course of a 20-minute conversation, and this is a 20-minute scene of them sitting at this sort of scarred wooden kitchen table,
mm-hmm,
basically by doing things like politely asking for a refill of milk and complimenting the guy's daughter and just being very pregnant pauses, manages to completely terrify this farmer, mm-hmm, into admitting that he's hiding a Jewish family under the floorboards of his home and has been for the last year.
Wow.
And so in a sudden hail of machine gun fire, Landa's troops kill the Dreyfus family, just bullets all through the floorboards, except teenage daughter Shoshana, who's played by Melanie Laurent, flees into the woods.
Mm.
All right, and then we pick up with chapter 2. We're taken out somewhere in Europe, we don't know where, but American Lieutenant Aldo the Apache Rain, who's played by Brad Pitt,
right,
who's in his full-blown, I mean, if you've seen him in Burn After Reading or if you've seen him in Snatch, in that sort of very, very funny but very grounded kind of performance that, mm-hmm, makes you think, the man should only do comedy and quit trying to be a heartthrob, that's what he's doing here.
Right.
But basically, Aldo is rallying this small unit of Jewish American soldiers to go behind enemy lines and slaughter and scalp Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole idea is just that they're going to strike fear in the hearts of the Nazis with these shockingly cruel acts of retribution on German troops. And each of the men, nicknamed the Bastards, are commanded to collect 100 Nazi scalps. With the exception of Boston boy Donnie Donowitz, who's played by Eli Roth, who, mm-hmm, is nicknamed the Bear Jew, and he prefers to fill his quota with a Louisville Slugger.
Wow.
Then,
It sounds like this was something that Eli Roth was begging to do.
Oh gosh,
and was perfect
and
for him.
And he's terrific in it.
Right. Yeah.
And his intro, how we meet the Bear Jew, is one of the most memorable. As memorable as Uma Thurman and John Travolta dancing in Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
That is how memorable the intro is for The Bear Jew. But we're shifted back to France, and Shoshana is now resurfaced in Paris. She's hiding in plain sight under a Gentile name as the owner of a movie theater. And she's a pretty blonde, and she attracts the attention of this German war hero who's named Frederick Zoller, played by Daniel Brühl. And he's kind of like a German Audie Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's exploits as a sniper have been made into a movie by Joseph Goebbels. And Zoller gets the idea to convince Goebbels to have the film premiere in Shoshana's theater.
Uh-huh.
So suddenly it sets up this situation where she has this opportunity to take revenge on not only on the Nazis, but on Landa, who's going to be the head of security, and on Adolf Hitler, who is going to show up to watch the premiere.
Mm.
Well, of course, something like this, word gets out to the British and German British and American high commands, and guess who they send along to see if maybe they can't blow this party up?
Who?
The bastards.
Right.
So everybody's on one of those great cinematic collision courses that he does so well. And it is just one big explosive thing whenever it finally happens. I mean, it meets your expectations, if not exceeds them. But there's so many great, unforgettable characters. I mean, you got Diane Kruger in full old school glamour, mm-hmm. you know, Marlene Dietrich mode as a German movie star / double agent. Michael Fassbender, who we're all going to get mm-hmm. to know really well when he's in Jonah Hex,
right.
plays a vetty former film critic turned soldier turned spy. Mike Myers, there's a lot been said about his cameo. He
right.
has a cameo as one of those sort of, I mean, it's hilarious, but it's also just a straight turn
uh-huh.
as this very sort of stiff upper lip British general. And then Rod Taylor, who I didn't even know was still alive, is playing Winston Churchill in the thing.
Nice.
I mean,
very
so
nice.
It is just uniformly, there are terrific performances. It's got all of the Tarantino hallmarks that you know and love: the outlandish violence, the tribute to old movies, the darkly funny, just laugh out loud moments to it. But he's finally kind of got the balance. I mean, got the mix just right. And he's even got sort of the pacing peculiarity. You know, he always has this tendency to sort of drag scenes out. He lets the tension build, then he lets it sort of level, then he, mm-hmm. you know, suddenly it builds again. He does that in this movie, and he manages to rein in just before it becomes a problem. So,
wow.
It really is an incredible film. It has been worth
okay, so like if I disappear for 3 hours tomorrow, I'm just having a lunch, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Only don't eat. Well, I mean, unless you have a strong stomach, you probably shouldn't eat at a Tarantino movie. I mean, you know, unless you have a strong stomach for watching people get scalped.
Right.
But you know, don't eat. just eat a big breakfast, and then by 11, you'll be ready for
wow. Okay.
For Inglourious Basterds. And guys, this. You know, this is the third week in a row, and we didn't do a podcast the last couple weeks, but this mm-hmm. is the third week in a row we've had a 4-star movie involved.
That's right.
Here.
That's
George
right.
Last week, two 4-star movies.
Last week, District 9, without question, you know, one of the best films of the summer, and something that I see as a real corrective for the kind of science fiction that we've been seeing, as at least the sort of action adventure science fiction. Amazing film. And then the week before that was 500 Days of Summer. If you haven't seen that already, it's still out this week. By all means, go. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. We never thought that we would see an August. August is when
August.
All of the garbage comes out.
Oh, and we'll have our share of garbage.
And sure, there's garbage, but we're seeing some pretty amazing films coming out in the last month of summer.
Three 4-star films.
Three
in August.
Four star
That's
films.
Amazing.
So.
So there's no reason not to go to the theater this weekend. I don't care how nice they say the weather's going to be.
Right. I mean, you can complain all you want about the summer movie season, but you know, but they're really handing it to us this time, and I think you know, this is one of those rare moments where you can actually go to the theater and you can come out with your brain intact, unless you've been scalped. You know, I mean,
you're a Nazi.
Only if you're a Nazi. So
in
Nazis,
which case, you earned it.
Nazis beware. Anyway, you know, but this is truly an amazing month so far. So you know, so hey, bring it on. Give us more 4 stars. We're happy about it.
In between, we have one that I think you were kind of disappointed in.
Yeah,
which was Postgrad.
Yeah, you know, so Postgrad is kind of a routine film. I mean, you see a lot. You see elements of The Devil Wears Prada in it. You see it's a young college student played by Alexis Bledel who's graduated with honors from college, and then she has this a dream of buying this amazing apartment and then going to work for the number one publishing house in Los Angeles. I didn't know they had publishing houses in Los Angeles, but anyway,
I didn't think they read books there, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it doesn't work out. She gets beaten to the punch on this job by her chief college rival, and then she ends up having to move back in with her family in suburban Los Angeles.
This sounds too much like life, I think.
Well,
for a lot of
a little bit, you know. I mean, and in that respect, I think it's probably relatable for a lot of people who are going out there and trying to find their first job in a pretty nasty job market. But on the other hand, it doesn't really find its tone that well. There's you have this completely wacky family that is I described it as being like Little Miss Sunshine if it were directed by Savage Steve Holland. Savage Steve Holland was the guy.
Is there a dancing cheeseburger sequence?
Exactly, dancing cheeseburgers. This is the guy who directed Better Off Dead. You know, I want my $2. And so you have this kind of wacky family of a father who's played by Michael Keaton, who is this OCD guy who makes belt buckles for a living. And then there's Grandma, who's like who's played by Carol Burnett. And she's angry all the time and just spitting bile, and she's convinced she's gonna die any moment, so she's shopping for her own coffin. And then you have the little brother there, because there always has to be a kind of a goofball, creepy little brother. This kid compulsively licks people's heads. Okay, that's his thing. Anyway, so it's.
I think I liked it better in Better Off Dead when he was blowing the house up.
Exactly, but so this is the it's that there's a whole lot of quirks there, but not a whole lot of character development. Anyway, so Ryden Mulby, who's played by Alexis Bledel from Gilmore Girls, and gotta love Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls was a great show, and Alexis was great in it. Here she's kind of playing a variation on Rory Gilmore, she's just kind of the character's kind of spinning her wheels, spending a lot of time with the Brazilian infomercial producer next door, who's
wow.
played by Rodrigo Santoro from Lost, and she's not paying enough attention to her best friend Adam, who's played by Zach Gilford of Friday Night Lights.
He's been in love with her forever.
And he's been in love with her since she was a fetus, and of course she's too blind to see the true love that is right in front of her. Anyway,
Jane Campion so early in the morning for you, Mr. Drama. Saw a Jane Campion screening this
morning. That's right. That's right. Great movie, but it's 2 months away, so we'll talk about it in October. It's called Bright Star. But anyway, you're seeing a lot. You're seeing a lot of randomness, a lot of things that you've seen before. The director, Vicky Jensen, she comes from the CG. cartoon realm. She was the co-director on Shark Tale and Shrek. But you kind of think maybe the real human world isn't for you.
So this film feels entirely carbon and plastic.
It is an extremely average comedy, and with a lot of really strong talent. I mean, when you got Michael Keaton, Jane Lynch, Carol Burnett, Alexis Bledel, all of these people are in the same movie, you expect something a little bit better. But it just felt way too random for to be really effective as a kind of topical romantic comedy. So,
if you want to talk about random, let's talk about random. Let's talk about Shorts. It's the latest family film from Robert Rodriguez, and as you guys probably know, Robert Rodriguez is a writer director. He's friends with Quentin Tarantino, and he has this sort of weird quirk where he likes to go from these very sort of cheeky, very violent action movies to wholesome kids' fare. That comes from being, I guess, a Texan with five kids. I'm not sure, but that's what he likes to do. And his family films are pretty uneven. Let's put it that way. They're very imaginative.
Well, he's taking these ideas from his kid, right?
Right. In this case, he did, and this is the second time he's done that. But there's a lot of imagination, there's a lot of creativity, but there's a lot of just really off-the-wall weirdness that goes into one of these things. But with Shorts, I kind of to sum up whether or not Shorts is for you, there's a 9-foot-tall booger that comes to life and terrorizes its owner and his family and friends.
That's what I get up in the morning wanting to see.
So if you're a 9-year-old boy, this is probably riveting cinema. But for the rest of us, probably not so much. But it's goofy, it's sometimes gross, and it's pretty kind of an uneven film. But it's based on an idea from one of Rodriguez's sons. Rebel is his son's name.
Yeah, he's the kid who's responsible for the adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl,
Racer,
right?
Racer was the one that was responsible
was. Rebel. I don't want to blame you for Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
All of his kids have R names. But his last movie that he made, that was a family movie, was Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl, which George will hate till the end of time.
That headache is still not completely gone.
And it was
gone,
in 3D, and it was an old red-green 3D. Thank goodness, is not in 3D. Racer came up with that idea for it. But, same thing applies here. Rodriguez's son comes up with kind of a core premise, and then dad takes it and spins it into a movie. And basically what Shorts is actually a series of 5 short films, and it's set in the fictional town of Black Falls, which is the corporate headquarters of Black Box Industries, and it's this very sort of cookie-cutter-ish kind of suburb. But the shorts are intertwining sort of mini-movies that are told out of order, complete with like the little DVR like command thing on the screen where, at the end of one, the narrator says, "Wait, I forgot this happens first," and hits fast forward and goes back. Basically all of them have to do with the pandemonium that breaks out in town whenever a trio of local brothers find a magic wishing rock at the beginning of the rainbow. And the story starts in the middle, but it starts with an 11-year-old nerd named Toe Thompson. He's played by Jimmy Bennett. This is a child actor we've seen in a lot of different movies. He was in Hostage, and he's been in lots of stuff. But he gets beamed in the by a multicolored rock by a group of bullies led by Helvetica Black, who is played by promising newcomer Jolie Varner. She was really great in this movie. But she is a pint-sized bully who is so bad that she gets her own catchy operatic theme song. The movie actually goes to, and towards the end it builds to a point where it's Rodriguez singing Helvetica, Helvetica, because she's that bad. She is basically channeling like Christina Ricci as Wednesday Addams in this movie. It really is quite entertaining.
I want my own catchy operatic theme song.
I'll write you one when we get done.
All right.
But Helvetica is she's bossy, but she's really kind of secretly needy. She's the daughter of the tyrannical Carbon Black, who's played by the scenery-chewing James Spader. And Mr. Black is the CEO of Black Box Industries, where every adult in town works. And the company makes this handheld multitasking device called the Black Box. And Mr. Black is obsessed with making sure this gadget's functionality takes it to the point where it can do practically anything. I mean, it's a toaster and a cell phone, and it sends email. And
it's a floor wax, and it's a dessert topping.
And yeah, you can shave your mustache with it, and you know, all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, it can do all these things, and he wants it to be able to do more and more and more. But so Toe gets the Rainbow Rock home. He wishes for some cool friends, and a fleet of tiny aliens zip into his life and start causing trouble.
Of course.
I mean, he asked for cool friends. This is what you get. His parents, who are played by Leslie Mann and John Cryer, hardly notice because they're obsessed with their jobs. But Toe's mom accidentally picks up the rock, and she and her distant husband are merged into one body, which is the literal translation of her murmured, "I wish we were closer." You know, the rock goes from person to person in town. It causes all sorts of chaos. It unleashes a giant booger on a germophobic scientist played by William H. Macy and his nose-picking son. It gives the Stones initial finder. The name of this character is Loogie Shorts. I didn't make that up.
Mm.
An unending supply of chocolate bars. And eventually Mr. Black starts to clue into the fact that there's this rock that makes anything happen, and he seeks it out in the hopes of making his company and his little gadget even more powerful. So you got a strong array of visual effects, some imaginative scenes, but with most of Rodriguez's family films, it really feels just sort of rushed and only semi-developed. I mean, it really feels a little half-baked. And then there's messages, of course, about be careful what you wish for, technology can be bad, greed is not good, and those you've only heard a million times.
Aww.
But I would say that it's more creative and more appropriate entertainment for, say, a 9-year-old boy than Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Well, that's high praise. Okay.
I mean, if you have your choice between, hey, Mom, let's go see Transformers Revenge of the Fallen and the racist twin aliens in it, hey, no, why don't we go see Shorts instead? There's a booger, but at least we can cover our eyes during that part.
That's true. That's true. But I'll say again what I said when I reviewed Sharkboy and Lava Girl. You know, when you've heard a 9-year-old tell a story, you know, and it's your 9-year-old, or it's a 9-year-old you're related to, or a good friend, or whatever, then, you know, it's fascinating. But, you know, but does it need to be made into a movie?
Yeah.
Does it need to be made
does
into a movie?
Does it need to be made into a movie preserving the whole, oh, but I forgot this part happened first,
right,
to it? I mean, that and this one, that's really the case. I mean, but there are a couple of those shorts that were really, really fun. They were very zippy. They were very, you know, sort of bright, light, entertaining. But there were a couple of them, most notably the booger one, that it was like, is this never going to end? Where is that fast forward button I keep seeing on the screen? Because I want it now.
Right.
You know, so there's, I mean, it had its moments. But still, I just wish Rodriguez knew how to make family movies, although I liked the first Spy Kids pretty well. I wish he knew how to make family movies like he knows how to make action movies.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, because he's a master at that. But yeah, so he and his friend Quentin are opening against each other, but they're probably not going to impact each other's box office this time.
Too much overlap, except for maybe parents sneaking out of Shorts to go see Inglourious Basterds.
There you go. There you go. Okay, our next one is Paper Heart, and this was actually a Wire review. They didn't screen it for us locally, although I certainly would have liked to have seen it. It's it centers on Charlene Yee. She's a sort of an underground comic. We've seen her in bit parts, like a very memorable bit part in Knocked Up. She's part of that whole sort of like Superbad Apatow kind of repertoire.
She's here a lot on YouTube too. I mean,
that's
right. She's got a lot of her comedy posted there.
Exactly. I mean, she's a real offbeat comic. Go
sort of musings kind of thing.
YouTuber. She's really interesting. But she won the screenwriting prize at Sundance for this film Paper Heart. It's a mockumentary about her search for love, and it's which is not something that she necessarily believes in until she meets her real life boyfriend. Friend Allegedly. Michael Cera from Superbad. And so some of this is supposed to be, you know, like on the level, real, you know, but you don't really know which one is what's real and what is, and what's been staged, and what is happening randomly in this film. Yi goes through Paper Heart interviewing people about their experiences with love, you know, talking to, you know, an Elvis impersonator who's a justice of the peace at a Vegas wedding chapel, talking to, you know, this old married couple who are telling her, you know, that it's going to strike, you know, that true love is going to strike, just wait for the lightning bolt. She talks to a divorce court judge, a romance novelist, a gay couple, all of these different people, and, you know, trying to kind of get a bead on what true love really is. And there's this dynamic with Sarah, and you can't really tell exactly if these two actually had a relationship or this is just being put on.
Right. And I maybe read it a doesn't separate really matter. Story. She said they were friends.
But. That's right. Maybe it doesn't even matter in this case because. Roger Moore from the Orlando Sentinel, he gave it a 2.5 stars. Rating, which, you know, that's to me, I don't know. It sounds like it might have been a little harsh given what he says about it. It sounds like a fairly inventive film. It's probably something that is worth seeing just because, you know, she's an emerging talent, and mm-hmm. it's somebody that you probably want to be watching. So
well, and it's always interesting to see something, and this is almost bringing us back around to Tarantino, mm-hmm. somebody who's doing something a little different with cinema that they're right. not following like the post-grad formula of, you know, this situation.
Everything you've seen before.
Yeah, everything right. you've seen before. She's kind of blurring the lines between narrative and documentary
yes.
throughout this film, almost to the point where people, unless you've done quite a bit of research, probably mm-hmm. don't know which is which.
Now,
so it makes it for a pretty interesting, you know, at least conceptually.
Neither one of us have seen this film, and for shame for not screening it here, but,
finger
you know,
shame.
The wagging finger of shame, but... You know, when I see something like this, I mean, I'm immediately intrigued by it. So, you know, I mean, 2.5 star maybe, but you know, it sounds interesting. So probably worth checking out at the very least. And then there's X Games 3D, the movie.
Yeah, this didn't screen anywhere. At all. I imagine that. The people who are interested in the X Games and things like that are pretty excited about it. But all I really have is a description that I'm going to read. But it's...
Is it going to be a dramatic reading?
No.
Oh, come on. No. Be dramatic.
There's no drama to it.
Oh, you didn't see a Jane Campion movie?
No, I didn't. I don't know that there's that much narrative. And the point of the reason I won't do it, something dramatic is I don't think that there's that much of a narrative to it. I think it's more of a documentary. It doesn't say it's a documentary, but it's from Disney. And it's 90% native 3D content, which vividly documents the dedication of these athletes as they pursue glory and progression on the ultimate stage in action sports. I mean, so I think it's
glory
mostly...
and progression on the ultimate stage.
Man, you and Jane Campion movies and coffee do not mix.
There you go.
But it's directed by award-winning filmmaker Steve Lawrence from Down the Barrel. The film uses groundbreaking digital 3D techniques to provide an unprecedented all-access pass to the X Games.
Unprecedented all-access pass to the X Games.
I feel like I have my own Barker here.
You have your own Barker here.
But anyway, so it includes iconic action sports personalities, Shaun White, Travis Pastrana, I don't know, follow the X Games, Danny Way, Ricky Carmichael, Bob Burnquist, Kyle Loza. These are some of the people that are going to be featured in this film. Like I said, I imagine that if you're very interested in the X Games and you really want to see in 3D up close and personal how they do what they do, that would be interesting. But I can't say for sure because they didn't screen it.
Okay, let's wrap this up then. So Inglourious Basterds, the absolute must-see. Absolutely, unless you're nine, in which case you probably go see Shorts.
Do not go to see this movie if you're under the age of 12.
That's right.
I don't want to be responsible for having scarred your, for allowing Quentin Tino to scar your psyche. Quentin Tarantino. If you say it fast enough, it sounds like Quentin Tino.
Quentin Tino.
Like it's his own cappuccino.
Yeah, and then post grad, meh.
Meh.
And then there's Paper Heart. Sounds interesting. You know, we'll just have to see. I'm definitely gonna check it out. And then there's X Games 3D, the movie.
The movie, which George can get dramatic about.
That's right. That's right. I guess, but probably won't be seeing it because I don't have that fascination for the skateboard, for the half pipe,
for the et cetera.
So anyway, go see Inglourious Basterds. Come back next week. We'll have several more movies to talk about. And thanks for downloading us. For Brandy McDonald, I'm George Lang.